You're listening to Riot Gear, expert conversations on the things we have learned, helping business owners improve their digital maturity. And now here's your host, Rob Merkowitzer.
Thanks for joining. My name's Rob Merkowitzer. I'm Managing Director and CEO of Riot Solutions. Today we're interviewing Scott Reed. Scott's an Executive Director here at Riot, also runs our sales and business development team. Scott spent a number of years in the industry, arguably known as an industry statesman and indeed a spokesperson for IT in general. Welcome, Scott. You can give us a little bit of a background on you in the last 10 years and what you've been doing in the industry.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the time, Rob. Really appreciate it. For the listeners there, you can't see the grey hair, but certainly been around this industry for a period of time. Enjoyed about 30 years in this industry. Last 5 years was going on this journey of building something unique and different in the industry, which quite proud. I think we've done a fairly good job in doing that. Prior to that, various roles within Cisco, 17 years with Cisco, running Queensland, Northern Territory, Papua New Guinea, but also running their healthcare business, their education business. And my last role there was actually the most interesting, which was the National Head of Public Sector Digitisation, which involved a lot in the area of IoT, smart cities, and assisting CEOs and governments to understand how they could leverage next generation approaches to transform their business.
Today we thought we'd take a theme around how customers are changing their thinking. Touches on a couple of points, not only what's been happening with COVID the last 6 months, but actually something we've seen shift within the industry over the last couple of years, and something that Riot has taken quite seriously with regards to an architectural approach. What are the sort of things that you're finding within our custom sets when you're talking to them around their approach to transformation? And you mentioned digitization before, but how is this architecture or architectural path in their thinking when you first talk to them?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's really hard because of the way our industry typically operates. Unfortunately, we need to wind back time where we went back to companies who knew what they did, how they did it, and got the basics right of respecting how they delivered things. So unfortunately, we've got an industry that's matured to where we're very much a product orientated and approach about coming to the solution before we actually talk to people about what the problem is. So it actually takes quite a bit of time working with customers to stop and not talk about the solution, but actually talk about their business outcomes that they want to achieve first. So I usually spend a lot of time with customers around architecture, but there are two really important pieces of architecture. There's certainly technical architecture, which I'd like people to think that we were very good at and had a lot of focus on. But more importantly, it's almost impossible to create technical architecture if you don't understand the business architecture of where clients are coming from. And I think this has come to most fruition in this current environment that we find ourselves with COVID. It's no secret that we're in uncharted territory, and it's no secret that organizations are going, how am I going to restructure myself to be able to address things? So one of the common threads we're noticing with clients at the moment is, I'm going to have to do more with the same or more with less. So I'm going to have to grab this technology I've got and sweat that asset a bit more. And when you do that, it actually is quite confronting for clients, because what they need to do is actually stop and go, well, I need to resort back to architecture, and how am I going to re-architect what I've got to make the most out of it? And then how do I map that to the changing front of the business, which is very fluid and very agile at the moment in the market? So it's an interesting conversation, but we need to undo a lot of legacy thinkings in the way in which our industry has become accustomed to working.
So has COVID created an opportunity then for customers to actually stop, even give them a bit of time to just pause on what may have been in their strategic pipeline and reassessing what they have to do in that space now, not only to support the remote access of workers, but also how cybersecurity and network refresh is going to impact them over the next couple of years.
Yes, it has had the time to stop and reflect, but unfortunately there's a lot of things that don't afford them the opportunity to stop and reflect. If we looked at cybersecurity, particularly during COVID, this has been a unique opportunity for an increased presence in that arena. And there's a lot of activity going on in that arena. So people are having to act in an agile fashion as well as a reflection piece of what they're doing. The one thing that is interesting, and particularly we notice this in the government and the larger enterprise clients at the moment, is people are not only looking at how do I make more out of what I've got, not just from a technology perspective, but from a people perspective. So what assets do I have in skills, and how do I grab those skills, and where are those skills best to be partnered or collaborated with industry to affect outcomes? And we've seen globally governments collaborate with industry very well to do that. The second dynamic that's happened is, and this is a piece of this fast, slow piece that you talk about, unfortunately, customers in some instances need to go quick. But what they've identified is when they look at the people piece and collaborating with industry, sometimes a lot of the typical red tape that's orientating slowing down thinking is moved out of the way when they look at, well, who is best positioned to be able to do this. So that's sort of very encouraging.
And are we seeing IT budgets shrinking? There's a lot of talk in the press about it. We've heard a few stories from customers. Is this something that the industry should be concerned about?
I think what people are focused on is, yes, in general, that's a really nice generalisation that budgets are sinking. But I think what I'm seeing is people are really focused on efficiency. So when you look at efficiency, there are certainly people utilising. So the companies that are surviving right now are the companies that are utilising the opportunity to reinvigorate themselves. I mean, if we looked at the simple case of restaurants that don't have people turning up anymore, the ones that have decided to go, okay, well, we're going to change and we're going to become online and we're going to deliver that are the ones that are succeeding. So in a way, they're increasing their investment in the areas that they need to change their business. The part they need to focus on is what do they need to hang on to, what do they need to change, and where does that investment come? So in some cases, we're actually seeing an increased investment. Certainly in cybersecurity, and we've seen this from Scott Morrison, with some of the recent announcements and some of the state-based attacks that we're seeing, there's certainly an increased need to improve investment.
I want to pick up on cybersecurity because, arguably, Scott, you were mainly in the network space throughout your career, particularly with Cisco. And when you joined Riot, cybersecurity was either one dirty word or two parts of one dirty word. We all know you've got a book of analogies. After now nearly 4 years in the business, looking at both network and security, how do you describe cybersecurity to an executive in a new potential Riot customer?
A couple of things. Firstly, I look at it through a customer's eyes and listening to a customer and trying to decipher how a customer's viewing the world and what they're looking at. And quite simply, what they're saying is, I've got an increased amount of pressure from my business, a board, or investors or executives to understand where we are in relationship to cybersecurity. Then when they look at that problem and they look at our industry is extremely confusing and extremely complex. And what they're actually asking that I see is, help me understand where I am and help me understand the basic things that I need to do to be able to address this. And why our industry makes that so difficult is we make it very complex. I use the analogy that a lot of the security industry is a little bit like the four-wheel drive accessory market, where a bit like ARB, four-wheel drive accessories. Lots of companies talking to people that they need lift kits or winches or big tyres or light bars, but they've ceased to actually ask the customer what vehicle they were driving, and when they did, they found out that they were driving a Toyota Corolla. So what I found is people are saying, tell me the basic things I need to do to improve myself before I can start to look at the advanced things. And it's quite concerning because you know, in summary of what I see, it's some very simple fundamentals that need to be followed. Firstly, you need to have an understanding of where your maturity model is at and where you're at. Secondly, if we look at it and we get that position, the simple things like patching, or as we would refer to them as vulnerability management services, or the acronyms that our industry is wonderful at applying, pretty basic. I need to make sure that my systems are patched, because most attacks come from extruding that. Then secondly is I need some visibility once I've got my patchings of what are my systems covering, where are my vulnerabilities coming from, what assets do I have, who's connected to them, who has access to them. And we would refer to that as SIEM or incident response type services. So us providing some visibility tools for a client, taking their data, helping them understand where their assets are, helping them understand how vulnerable they are, and then assisting them to work on their maturity to go and do complex things such as SOCs. And then lastly, it would be things such as multi-factor authentication. A really simple piece, but how do I have a simple technology that ensures that the user that's accessing this system is that user? And multi-factor authentication is one of those simple pieces. If I look forward past that, we then start getting people to worry about cloud applications, multi-cloud, private versus public is going to be an interesting next phase for them. But if they, you know, truly if they look for those basic piece of, am I patched? Have I got incident response and visibility of that? And have I got MFA? In all honesty, in my opinion, if people followed that, they would be in advance of 90% of their competitors in the market.
So you touch on complexity and visibility, and it's actually something that we spoke to Nick Long with previously. And I would suggest that from a Riot perspective, trying to make things simple is very difficult, but that tends to be where we drive our strategy with our customers too. What is it about our industry that likes to keep things complex? And what hope do customers have with the myriad of access and information that they get on a daily basis, and vendors calling them, and even integrators such as ourselves calling them on a weekly basis? What hope do they have to actually be able to weed through this complexity?
So let's be honest and let's get to the truth of where that's coming from. Complexity in our industry equates to making things complex, confusing the client, and an opportunity to make more margin and charge more things for services. That's a fundamental ill that our industry has. The second piece, and again, I'm going to refer to a little bit of an analogy, I see the vendors certainly are driving a lot of the decision with the clients at the moment. We're not seeing the partners or the integrators actually talking to the customers about what the problem was they want to solve. So in my opinion, a lot of the vendors are operating a little bit like pill manufacturers, really, really well-intended pill manufacturers for that matter. They truly believe that if the patient acquires their pill, all their ills and ailments will disappear. What I prefer, and I think is a better way to approach clients, is sitting down with a patient and saying, we may get to a pill, but how about we have a talk about the architecture of your life? Are you smoking? Are you drinking? Are you eating appropriately? And when we get to a pill, trust me, it might be the right one, or we may not even need a pill. We may be able to re-architect what you're doing to get the same outcome and save you money. So it's really the essence of where companies are driving the culture of what they're about and where they believe they add value in partnership. I'd like to think that customers are looking not to be pill suppliers, they're looking for a long-term trusted relationship with their GP.
And do you think that art, do you think that want is still there? Is that art gone of having a trusted relationship with a service provider or an integrator for a long period of time? It feels as though over the last 5 or 10 years that's become a little bit fickle, or is it just that we've lost patience and we don't work hard enough to actually, you know, earn the trust?
Yeah, it's a matter of understanding your clients first, but you know, let's face it, we live in an economic society where pressures are high. Having been in vendors sitting on forecast calls once a week, understanding where that $10 million order is in and where it hasn't come from, we're driving people in the wrong behaviour. We actually need to flip that. And what we need to do is focus on the journey with the client rather than the result, and be trusting that if we go on the appropriate journey with the client, the result is things coming. The second piece is, I think there's a fundamental change in the world that needs to happen. Most organisations put on their priority list, I'll have shareholders first, I'll have clients second, and I'll have staff last. I'd like to think organisations that put their staff first and make them happy and skilled and wanting to come to work will look after their clients, and if their clients are looked after, then the shareholders will be looked after. And I think that's a fundamental change that's driving the behaviour that you talked about.
Now, just shifting a little bit wider through the IT spectrum, something that we're highly focused on here at Ride is critical infrastructure, which is really this convergence between IT and OT, being operational technology. Again, you joined Ride coming from a very large multinational company that had really bet the farm on this multi-billion dollar, even trillion dollar growth area of the market. And we've been playing in it for a few years now here locally in Australia. What shift are you seeing, if any, between, say, 3 years ago and more recently around this IT-OT convergence from customers generally being involved in an IT discussion, now scratching the surface and understanding that maybe a manufacturing or a retailer or a transport customer has actually a wide-scale risk profile around how they're integrating their operational part of the business?
Yeah, it's a complex topic you talk about, and you get a couple of things there. Firstly, one of the most passionate advocate people of IoT, and have spent my life travelling the world and looking at how cities, governments, enterprises deploy that. One fundamental change that I've seen is vendors have very much had and I refer to it lovingly as marshmallows and fairy dust. Build it and they shall come. So they were trying to find a problem to the product that they had to sell. So we saw smart lampposts, we saw smart water meters, we saw all of these sorts of wonderful things. And all of them involved trusting the dream and investing in something that was a revolution, and build it, they will come. Whereas I don't think anybody took the very simple approach of going, well, I get that my business has got to digitise and I need to move things. What assets and what things do I have today that if I slightly moved and changed could help me move down the foundations of that digitisation change? And I think when you look at operational technology, that's where it is. We've got lots of water meters out there. We've got lots of energy meters. We've got lots of light posts. We've got lots of critical assets. What if, and the requirement on those to be digitized and used in a different function is pressing, but actually just simply moving them to the left a little bit and following that and using that as the basis of an architecture, and starting with architecture about how I do that rather than ending up with the result, is where I think the magic is going to come in that market. We've certainly seen an increased demand in critical infrastructure. Unfortunately, a lot of that is being driven by the increased awareness of how vulnerable these assets are. What troubles me is the amount of customers who don't actually understand what OT assets they have, what they're connected to, who has access to them, and do something about that is an issue. But that's nobody's fault. Those systems were developed and designed in an era where those were not considerations, and now we're trying to retrofit and do that. The second piece is there's an argument saying that this really should be an IT world, not an OT world, and I don't succumb to that. I think that the future actually comes in the reskilling, or actually leveraging from that knowledge of these OT engineers who understand that an asset needs to be put in place and last for a period of quicker than the 3-year asset cycle that IT typically talks about. So a lot of our world is actually being a marriage broker and showing companies that the actual benefit is getting their OT teams and their IT teams to come together. Put simply, hey, Mr. High Visvest, you should meet Mr. Ponytail. Some magic could happen if you communicated and actually work together.
Yes, it's a cultural thing that has been talked about for quite some time, and definitely something that we've seen and experienced ourselves over the years. But it does feel like there's a shift, and potentially with the amount of investment that needs to go into Australia and infrastructure, with every state investing potentially at the same time, I think IT is going to be seen as a real enabler to enhance those projects, make them smarter, and actually deliver a lot more efficiently than they have in the past. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things, Scott, that you're doing, you know, outside of Wright, really, but with our support. One is around skills in our industry. I know you're passionate about that, and this idea of having a, from a Queensland perspective at least, having a true organisation / association that really puts to the forefront the challenges that we as a very large and growing industry need a voice for. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a couple of perspectives on that. Firstly, I applaud the Queensland government for their perspective of making the simple statement that a certain amount of their spend needs to be made with local SMEs and local-based organisations, which is great. If you follow that through further, the current associations that we have, unfortunately, are typically abused by the large multinational vendors to utilise a vehicle to push their agenda with governments, and then we find that their comment about SMEs is, don't worry, we'll just partner with those guys and we'll bring them to the forefront. So we have a responsibility to assist those smaller organisations to have a voice and understand how to communicate with government and understand the narrative of government. And I think there's a real gap there. The second piece is something I'm extremely personally passionate about. I've been fortunate enough to be blessed by the career opportunities I've had in this industry with the likes of Dell, Cisco, my own organisations. But it troubles me immensely that young people don't have an understanding of what a career in ICT looks like. And it troubles me even more that they're currently, we're a growing cyber organisation that I find it difficult to hire staff. So when I go to a university, I actually can't hire a university graduate. They have all the theory in the world, but no practicality. And I'm talking to young people who have inherited a debt that they're going to pay back for the next 15 years of their life, get to the end of a degree, find out that there's no job there, and then go and pursue a different career. One of the challenges that I hold up to our industry is, what's wrong with, how can we create apprenticeship programs in this industry, and how can we help students or future potential people coming to industry have a much more effective way to get access to industry, have a much more effective understanding of what ICT is, and particularly cyber. And I think that comes from associations pushing and driving that as well. I actually don't believe that ICT apprenticeships is the responsibility of the government. I think it's the responsibility of our industry. We're going to be the people that are going to employ them, so are our customers. So we need to find a way of, well, if there is a gap there, how do we fill that gap and what do we do? And then lastly, I come back to our comment about ICT versus OT. We have a lot of mature, skilled people operating in the OT arena, you know, ex-Telstra lineys or ex-Energy lineys. It would be quite simple to create an opportunity to reskill those people rather than cast them aside. And I think the opportunity to bring them into our industry and utilise that by an accelerated program is really keen. And it's my personal commitment to do that before I get put in a cardboard box and shoved in the ground.
That's great, Scott. I know you've been championing this in front of our customers as well, and we're getting some good feedback, and even a number of them wanting to come on board, which is really good. Thanks for listening. We look forward to coming back to you with another theme when we interview Michael Van Ruin, our CTO.